Welcome to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We're going to look ahead to the Cardinals-Giants matchup this Sunday, the second-to-last game for the Giants this season. We'll get into the GM search as the Giants announced that yesterday they interviewed Lewis Riddick for that position. So we'll get to your phone calls and your tweets along the way as well. Let's start with the game, Jeff.
And all right,
this
Lance.
Is a matchup between two teams that know they're mathematically eliminated, but the Cardinals, you can make the argument, even though they're now making another quarterback change back to Drew Stanton and they've had numerous injuries, just like the Giants, so both teams can relate. Arizona is actually one of the best defenses in the NFL over the last few weeks. They've got a very dangerous pass rush. They have a dynamic secondary, and this is a team where it's been very difficult to score points against them, no matter who they've been facing the last few weeks.
Well, I think that I think that their defense, you know, this team is a lot like the Giants when you think about their injuries, like you said.
A lot of similarities.
And, you know, really when you are struggling at the quarterback position like they are, and they have the most sacks in the National Football League. I know you asked me about the defense, but we'll get there. But, you know, defensively for the Cardinals, you know, they have a chance to get after this Giants offense. But I have a feeling, I think this Giants – this is a good matchup for this game. I think the Giants' offense matches up pretty well with this defense of the Cardinals, and if they can, you know, they can run the ball. I think the Cardinals are 25th. You got the numbers there. What is it? Is it
rushing offense? They're 30th.
Okay. What about their defense?
Their rushing defense, 6th, actually.
Yeah.
They've been pretty effective, and that gets back to my point. Over the last few weeks, specifically, they've been very good.
So I think when you look at the Eagles' defense last week, okay,
which was number one in the
NFL. What was the game plan? 2-3-step drops, quick hitters.
Get rid of the football.
Exactly. And I think that they go with that same game plan because, you know, they were not going to run the football against that Eagles defense last week, and it showed you that there were some big plays in the passing games there. And I think that the Cardinals, you know, probably have to go with that same game plan. And I would think if you're the Cardinals, you're thinking the Giants are going to do the same thing. But you're going to have to protect Eli because, like you said, their defense can get after the quarterback. You know, they got some guys that can play.
Yeah, I mean, Chandler Jones. I mean, he's got 15 sacks to lead the way for the team.
And, you know, you don't hear a lot about that because they're the Cardinals. You know, but 15 sacks is getting it done. I mean, that is very prolific. Carlos Dansby is another guy that is
veteran linebacker
who's leads the team in total tackles. I'm looking at the numbers here. Not that I memorize this stuff, but it's right here in front of me. 90 total tackles on the season. So, and then you got, you know, the Honey Badger. Does anybody even call him that anymore?
Oh, absolutely, Badger? Yeah. Tyron Matthew, they still call him that from his LSU days.
What a great story he was, you know, coming out of college and kind of the off the field stuff, but he's really turned it around and then coming back from that injury. So, you know, I think defensively they hang their hat. That's where they're, you know, the Cardinal team is. That's where they, if you want to talk about them, we're going to talk about their defense. We're certainly not going to talk about their offense. I mean, they had Adrian Peterson and he, you know, went on injured reserve. So their rushing game is not anything to write home about.
They've rotated so many different running backs.
And their quarterback position. And, you know, they got Larry Fitzgerald, but do they have an offensive line and a quarterback to get the ball to him? Yeah, I think the Giants have a good chance to go on the road if they can focus. The one thing that I look at this game from the standpoint of, you mentioned at the top, that none of them, they're out of everything. They have nothing to play for. You know, how does this team, the Giants team, get up to go play a non-division opponent? You know, they've gotten up for the last two games, the way they played against the Cowboys and the Eagles, at home against division rivals. How can they, you know, they're going to go on the road. At this time of the year, I will tell you, if you're in the game, and meaning you have a chance for the playoffs and things, or you're in the playoffs, this is a big distraction week when you have, because most of the players on the team who are married and have kids, they're young. They're young kids. Not like me. When I was older, I mean, my kids were, you know, 12 and 13, 14 years old when I was in the league, but they're young. There's a big distraction about Christmas and focus and things like that. So it worries me a little bit about a team that's 2-12 and 12 of last track. I know,
well,
I got the two right. I've got the two right. That's an easy one. But you know what I'm saying, Lance? So
yeah.
There's a lot of distractions going on. There's a GM search going on in the building. You are out of the playoffs. You have nothing to play for. It's Christmas week. A lot of shopping still left to do. All kinds of distractions. It'll be interesting to see how Spags can get this team focused to go on the road and go out there and play a Cardinals team who really is not that good. But I think they have a chance to win if they can stay focused and play like they have the last couple weeks.
Well, to me, the biggest area that I think the Giants can take advantage of, but it still remains a question mark, Jeff, because the pass rush has not been very consistent. When you look at the Cardinals, you mentioned the offensive line. It's been a revolving door at quarterback. It's been a revolving door at running back. It's also been a revolving door at offensive lineman for the Arizona Cardinals. Now, they've surrendered 49 sacks this season. That is the second most in the NFL. Gabbert, 23 sacks. Palmer, 22, and Drew Stanton, who's now going to reclaim the starting job four times. So every quarterback has had their fair share of issues. But can this be the game, Jeff, that the pass rush clicks? Because we saw, remember, they played the Redskins. The Giants had six sacks.
Yeah.
Outside of that game, they've had zero sacks. They've had one sack. There has not been an opportunity to say, hey, we're going to win the battle in the trenches, and it's going to show up in the box score.
And I think you got to take a little bit from that game plan against the Redskins and kind of move it into maybe this week's trying to do what they did against the Redskins.
Because now, they also had a banged-up offensive
absolutely.
Line.
Absolutely. But I think that one thing that you had to take notice of in the Redskins game was that they had Kirk Cousins. And, you know, if you did not get pressure on him, he would eat you alive. And so, you know, you have Drew Stanton, whatever his name is. I mean, you got to get after the quarterback. This is the week that I think Spags has to come up with some pressure and some different looks. I think that Eli Apple being back in the lineup last week helped the defense. I think even though that, you know, he's had his trials and tribulations, I think he came back and played a pretty decent game last week. And, you know, hopefully he can keep focused and go out there and do it again. We'll see. Because really, when we talked about Eli Apple in the pregame, we saw he was active. That was the number one thing. We didn't know that he was going to play as much as he did. He didn't start the game, but he came out and he played, I think, I don't know, most of the snaps he got, it was almost all of them for defense. So, and we were told that he was playing, you know, scout team and second team and all that kind of stuff, and he came out and played the game. So I think if they can get pressure on the quarterback and force some turnovers, because I think the Cardinals turned the ball over a lot too.
In terms of their turnover differential, they're tied with the Giants for 22nd in the NFL. They're both minus four. The Cardinals have had 22 turnovers compared to the Giants, who are at 18. So a few more turnovers than the Giants, a team that clearly when you have so many new personnel players coming in and out of the lineup,
yeah,
it's not surprising that you're going to turn the ball over because they have not had a lot of reps together. So not everybody's been on the same page.
So I know there's going to be a lot of the people that are sitting there going, well, you know, do we want the Giants to win games because of the draft order and all that kind of stuff? I will tell you that the focus is to win games. And the Giants go out and try to win these last two games. And people are playing for their jobs. They're coaching for their jobs. So it is important to the team, the 53 guys that are going to be going or playing this game. It does mean they want to win the game.
And certainly two winnable games to close out the season, Jeff.
Sure, yeah.
The Redskins, too, the following week. I mean, we don't need to necessarily preview that game. But on paper, you've got two opponents that have had just as many question marks over the course of the season.
Yeah, and I think that these are, if there's two games back-to-back that are winnable, I think these are it. I mean, I look at the way the Giants played. The Giants should have won that game last week without the special teams disaster that it was, because the Giants, without one of those plays, they win the game. And I think the block punt, to me, was the biggest one, because on a block field goal, you don't know if the field goal, even if he kicked it, would have made it anyways. You know, it could have been wide right.
Can't pencil that in. A lot of other
but a block punt in field position, it's like a turnover. It's a turnover, and they also scored 7 points off of it. So that, to me, was the turnaround in the game. And, you know, you hope this week that they're shoring up some of the blocking assignments, because it was definitely a lack of effort when it comes to blocking and what happened on those plays. And, you know, almost all the time it's not the kicker or the punter's fault. It's a blocking assignment. Somebody missed something. That's usually what happens.
But they need to be careful on special teams, because the Cardinals are a solid unit. They've got veterans at punter and Andy Lee, veteran kicker and Phil Dawson, and also
probably the two most veteran kicking tandem in the league. If you went and did the research, I'm probably correct with Andy Lee and Phil Dawson.
No, you probably are, because, yeah. I mean, if memory serves me correct, I think the two of them were together in San Francisco for a number of years,
yep.
And now they rejoined in Arizona. So, I mean, they're extremely experienced, as you mentioned. So you can't expect them to make mistakes. And the other guy that I was going to name, Jeff, is Buda Baker, who's the rookie safety. He just made the Pro Bowl, and it had nothing to do with his safety play because he hasn't been a starter the whole season. He leads them in special teams tackles with 15. So he's an opportunistic player. Yeah. They've got strengths all over the place in terms of special teams.
And back in the offseason, when we did the preview of the schedule and went down, John and I did the Cardinals, and Buda Baker, we had I think it was Kent Summers. Kent Summers was one of the beat reporters for the Cardinals. Came on our show and talked about him, and they were pretty high on the pick and thought that he was going to be a really good player. And I didn't know he made the Pro Bowl. That's amazing.
Yeah, he made the Pro Bowl because of his special teams play and that secondary, which I also mentioned earlier. Now you take into consideration every member of their starting secondary. They've all made at least one Pro Bowl, which to me is kind of unheard of. I mean, you get three members, every single person. I'm including the starting slot corner, too.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, even Justin Bethel has made three Pro Bowls as a special teamer also and a secondary player.
Well, I think, and like I said, I think the main focus here is focus. I think that as a coach, I'm trying to get this team to understand that I know you guys have family, and this is a special time of the year with what's going on at home. But we still have to focus here and go out into Arizona and try to win a winnable game. This is a winnable game for them, and it would be nice because I'll tell you that trip home from Phoenix or even in the West Coast is a long trip if you're losing games. And at this point, in the way the season has gone, if the Giants can go out and win a football game on the road. And be able to have to get on a plane and fly 5 hours back. It'd be a lot easier if you had coming off of a win going into Christmas than being the Scrooge.
Correct. Well said. Yeah, the last thing you want to do is knowing now you got to go home to your family and you're coming off a loss. And
yeah, I mean, everybody's already kicking the dog. You want to come home and maybe have a weekend where no one is kicking the dog this time. You can actually have, you know, be happy about winning their third game of the season, which is amazing to me when I just
it's been that type of a year.
Yeah.
And the Giants are coming off by far their most impressive offensive performance of the season, so you want to see them try to piggyback off of that. But what I would argue is while the Eagles' defense on paper is legit and the Giants somehow took advantage of them, this Cardinals' defense, I would argue, is even stronger than Philadelphia, especially when you look at the numbers. In their last four games, Cardinals have allowed an NFL-low 83 points, so that's one stat that jumps out to me. The second stat is, Jeff, dating back to Week 10, the Cardinals' defense ranks first overall in fewest yards allowed, first in pass defense, and third in run defense. So they have been very stingy in the last, we're talking, nearly 6 to 7 games.
And they only give up 35% on third downs. So, tough sledding here for this game. But I think that, you know, when you match up as well as they played last week against Philly, you know, if you played that way against the number one, well, not the number one, but one of the best
one defenses. One of the top defenses, certainly.
You can certainly go out there and do what you got to do and game plan and execute. And don't make mistakes. I mean, big plays was the name of the game offensively last week for the Giants. They made some big plays, and you know you have to continue the Tavares King play, the Sterling Shepard play. Continue to throw the ball to Evan Engram, who really has had a nice season for a rookie, and you're going to see good things from him in years to come. Definitely.
You just wonder, see, if you're the Cardinals. You now looked at film last week, Jeff, and you realized Eli got rid of the ball very quickly. Do the Cardinals now anticipate that the Giants are going to try to bring back that up-tempo offense, and do they make adjustments themselves? You know, guys getting hands in the air to bat down passes as opposed to try to overcommit and get to the quarterback. That's going to be the game of chess that I think will ensue.
Yeah, from a defensive standpoint, that you know, the zone blitz a lot of times where guys just back out into coverage, and those throwing lanes are all of a sudden, or you think they're there on the pre-snap, and then they're not. I mean, you got to be careful with that. But the Cardinals will do what they got to do to game plan. But I think the Giants' game plan is, you know, try to run the ball as much as you can. But you're going to have to make some plays in the passing game against this defense because they stop the run and they get after the quarterback. It's tough going. But you know, defensively, I think the Giants can make some big plays on defense: sacks, strip sacks, fumbles. You know, stop their running game and force Stanton into throwing some interceptions and getting some field position and trying to score some points. You know, the Giants came so close to getting that 30-point threshold that they've been looking for.
Well, they went for two instead of taking the extra point.
But, you know, 30 points against this Cardinals team is asking a lot. because of what you just said about
especially
their scoring.
Yeah, 83 points they've allowed in the last four games.
That's something else. That really is.
And, you know, to your point, which I brought up earlier, I agree with you. I mean, this is an appetizing matchup on paper in terms of the battle in the trenches because of the struggles that the Cardinals' offensive line has had. But now that I bring the numbers up in front of me, Jeff, six sacks week 12 at the Redskins outside of week 12. So from week 9 to week 15, they had one sack against the Seahawks. They had none against the Rams, none against the Niners, one against the Chiefs, one against the Raiders, none against the Cowboys, one against the Eagles. So they had one, two, three, four sacks if we eliminate the Redskins game in the span of one, two, three, four, five, six, seven games. Four sacks in seven games around that Redskins contest.
So that's a lot of money on that side of the defense that's only getting that type of production.
Plus, JPP and Vernon are both banged up, which Spags talked about the other day. So, you know, your top two edge rushers are not healthy. Even Snacks is dealing with injuries that he talked about.
And how
it's
he
been
gets
a struggle
snubbed
for
the Pro Bowl, I'll never know.
Maybe. Listen, I agree, and I'm glad you brought that up, Jeff. I agree. I mean, if you look at not just the numbers, if you look at the eye test, what he does, but this is my only counter. When you look at the three guys that made it, and there were only three interior defensive linemen. Hard to argue that those three didn't deserve to go.
And you know, it's one of those things where it's a tough position to make. You know what I mean? Because there's three. There's three guys.
Very
know,
limited.
Three out of 16 is it's hard.
Correct. Let's not be naive. I'm sure they're taking into consideration teams that got to the playoffs. You're going to give an edge to those players. Now, I understand Gerald McCoy is one of them, and Tampa Bay's not going anywhere, so I understand people are going to counter with that. But that is at least one of the factors. And then the other factor is, and even Snacks addressed this, he doesn't come into the game on third down more often than not, Jeff.
Yeah,
a lot of those
guys
other guys do, and they have balanced statistics in terms of tackles and sacks.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the other thing you got to take into consideration.
Yeah, and it happens every year with the Pro Bowl. There's guys that, you know, especially you're probably going to see it a lot this year, and it's unfortunate because the Pro Bowl is being played in Florida. You know, the Pro Bowl is meant to be played in Hawaii. I mean, that's the trip you want to go to. You want to have an all-expense-paid trip to Hawaii. You know, I know it's great to make the Pro Bowl and you get that on your resume, but an all-expense-paid trip to Orlando is just not really, to me.
Well, you got Disney World there, if that's your cup of tea for the kids, no?
Well, I guess so, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's so much easier. You can always go to Disney World and Orlando. You can't always go to Hawaii, especially when somebody's paying for it.
Yes.
But it's an honor. You want to make it. But my point is there's probably going to be a lot of guys that say,
thanks.
I really don't want to play in this. This is gonna. So there's going to be a lot of guys that probably will be able to go to the Pro Bowl and make it because they're first team or, you know, first alternate, second alternate.
Correct.
Like
Snacks is a fourth alternate. It's going to take a few guys to step aside. But remember, you don't know who's going to make the Super Bowl.
Yep.
I mean, think about it. Aaron Donald's on the Rams.
Well, he's definitely, yeah.
Rams have a legitimate shot perhaps to get to the Super Bowl.
And he's been to enough Pro Bowls that this may be one he just takes. Says, forget it. I just coming off of a long season and, you know, whatever.
Because
there's always risk of injury in that game, believe it or not.
Yep. Fletcher Cox, he's on the Eagles. They have a chance to get to the Super Bowl. And as I mentioned, Gerald McCoy and the Bucs are not going anywhere. So two of the three guys in his position in the NFC could very well take themselves out of contention because they're either banged up or they're going to the Super Bowl, which maybe gives him a shot to move up the charts. We'll see. We've seen a number of guys pull out. I mean, I remember some years, Jeff, people were complaining because they went through about, seven or eight different quarterbacks, and the ninth quarterback is now starting the Pro Bowl. So we've seen things like that happen. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to get to your phone calls here in a second. Just real quickly, Jeff, the GM search is continuing for the Giants. The Giants have made it official, so they've had two internal candidates that they've spoken with, and then we've seen the first external candidate yesterday, which is Lewis Riddick, commentator on ESPN. He's got connections to the NFC East. He was the pro personnel director for both the Washington Redskins and the Philadelphia Eagles, also was a scout. So, you know, a lot of people look at him as a broadcaster, but before that has had a lot of experience in the front office. So an interesting name simply because he's been on the TV for so long, and a lot of people, I think, recognize people when they're on television. But clearly the Giants at this point, they're going to do their due diligence, and I'm sure they may very well wait to speak to individuals who could be associated with current teams right now.
Well, I think everyone that they've interviewed obviously has been available, and, you know, there's people that aren't available at this point. So you're going to make every effort to get the people interviewed that are available to bring in, and they've certainly done that. You know that the Rooney Rule has to be addressed, and so I think that the Giants have addressed that and have checked that box. The other thing is that, you know, I think they're getting a good sample of, you know, like Dave Gettleman, who has been a GM, who has been in this organization, other organizations. You get a guy like Lewis Riddick, who's never been a general manager and is outside of the game right now. So you get his perspective. In those meetings, when you're sitting in there, I would love to be a fly on the wall and hear the questions that are being asked and also the answers to those questions. I think there's a lot of discussion on the roster. There's a lot of discussion on the type of coach that you're going to be looking for. I know for a fact, and I think you would agree with me, that there's two questions in that room that are being asked by each one of those, and that is, how are you going to handle number 10, and how are you going to handle number 1-3? And there's some other guys on there, you know, maybe JPP and some of the other defensive players that, you know, where's the cap situation? Tons and tons. That's why these meetings last 2.5-3 hours. Okay, but I think that the fact that they've done their due diligence up to this point, they're going to keep continuing because there are a lot of guys they still want to talk to, I'm sure. But who knows when it's going to come to an end. I mean, you would think sooner than later because they want to start getting started on searching.
On the head coaching search.
And explain a little bit, Lance, about the coaching search, how there is a certain time, what is it, the coaches that are in the playoffs that have a first-round bye. They can interview for...
Correct. But then once you continue it, usually it's the week off between the conference championship games or the Super Bowl is normally when they allow the coaches that go a little bit further into the playoffs. So it depends on who they're going to be targeting and what they're going to be looking for. But I think your point is well taken, Jeff, that the reason why you'd want the GM in place as close to the end of the season as possible, or at least within a few days, is because we don't know who's going to lose their job on Black Monday. Unfortunately, it's part of the business. So there may be guys that emerge that you never thought would be available. You're going to want to talk to them before other teams jump in and want to speak to them as well.
And I had mentioned, you know, a few weeks back that, you know, one of the advantages, if you will, and it's unfortunately it's an advantage because the disadvantage is that you're 2-12. But, you know, you get a jump start on a lot of that goes on when you have the vacancies already. And so that's kind of maybe back in their mind, that was probably maybe one of the reasons they wanted to do what they did when they fired Jerry and Ben. But, yeah, so they have an opportunity to get in front of some people way earlier than a lot of the other people would have. So.
But one other thing that I wanted to mention, and I thought you brought up a really good point, Jeff, no matter who is ultimately hired, the conversations that they're having with especially external candidates are productive because you're getting perspective from individuals who have not been in the war rooms, who have not been with you on a day-to-day basis evaluating the roster. So even if you don't ultimately hire them, you get their lens of what they think of the current roster, which I think is valuable.
What's their optics on your team?
Exactly.
And from an outside perspective. And you know, there's probably a lot of things that they don't want to hear, but it's the fact that the matter is that this is from another person's eyes and ears and listening and seeing this team. They're telling them, this is where, you know, if I was the guy to come in or this is the coach that's going to come in, these are the things that we need to address because obviously this is what the problem is from outside the organization. And sometimes when you're inside an organization, you have blinders on because, you know, there's a lot of loyalty to certain positions within the organization. And sometimes, you know, it takes an outside person to come in and kind of sway your decision making because of that kind of information.
And the one other thing that I think is important to note, because I know probably the mindset is, well, the internal candidates were a part of this current regime. And wouldn't you want to perhaps look at somebody externally to give a change of pace?
Yeah.
But what I think a lot of people need to understand, Jeff, is just because you're promoting somebody internally, they were not in the decision-making chair.
Right.
And they may have had different schools of thought from the person making the decision, but they're only one individual in the room, and their perspective is not necessarily going to be carried out.
And a classic example of it is, and even from the coaching position, is Steve Spagnuolo comes in here, and he's a, you know, obviously he was a coach under Ben McAdoo, Ben McAdoo says, I'm going to run my practices this way. Well, what does Ben do? I mean, what does Steve do when he gets here? He's like, I don't want to practice on Saturday anymore. We're going back to the Friday routine.
He makes slight changes.
Changes things. So yeah. Everybody has their own way and wants of doing things. And you're right. That's so, you know, maybe like a Kevin Abrams or a Mark Ross or any of those guys that worked under Jerry, they weren't pushing the buttons. They were just basically writing the reports and giving their input on
advising.
Certain things and advising. Yeah. And then the bottom line is that, you know, Jerry pushed the button, and ultimately, you know, those buttons that were pushed cost him his job. And so you don't want to look on a negative way at the guys that are already here because, you know, I'll tell you what in my opinion on the GM search to me is very, very important because if I'm the next GM, the coach that I want that coach to be hungry. I want a coach that hasn't won. I want a coach I don't want a retread, if you will, a guy that's been to Super Bowls and done that kind of stuff. I don't think that's the type of coach this team needs. This team needs a coach that's hungry, that wants to go out there and prove that he can do it his way. And, you know, you look like a guy like McVay who that's what happened. That's a guy that was hungry, that's, you know, is a young up-and-coming coach. And look what he did for an organization that was horrible last year. And now the Rams, what they are this year. It can happen. You know, the Rams went out there and addressed their offensive line in the offseason. They got a couple tackles. They got Whitworth, who everybody is, you know, crying that the Giants never got him. That's working out great for him. So just so you know, the National Football League can be turned around very quickly nowadays, where in the past it would take 2 or 3 years, but it can be turned around right away. But I want a coach that's hungry. I want a guy that's going to come in here and rule with an iron fist and do things the way he wants to get it done. And I think that hiring the GM, I think he has to want that same thing. He wants to go get a coach that's going to be hungry and along with himself being hungry to change the thing. The thing about this is that the Giant organization is true and blue. I mean, they love to promote within. They love to do things within the building. This is, to me, is going to be a draw a line in the sand. Are we going to do it the old way, or are we going to think outside the box and go a completely different way? Because what's happened here this year is unprecedented for this organization. It really is. And you think about, you know, the record that this team ends up with. If they only end up with two games on the win side, it'd be the worst Giant season in the history.
Correct, yeah. Which is
that's
hard to
going
imagine.
Back way, way
yeah.
back.
Even with the rough years of the 70s, yep.
So when you're going to try to do things the way you've always done them, if there's not a better time to just draw that line in the sand and say, we're not doing it this way this time. We are going to go outside the box, and we're going to think this way and do things a little bit different. And that's why the GM position to me is so, so very important. I really do. And we'll see what happens. I'm sure it's going to come down here fairly soon because of what we talked about.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. He's Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for tuning in to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's open up the lines. Hugo is in New Jersey. He gets us going.
Hugo, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, guys, and happy holidays.
Same you too. Hugo. You too.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Hey, you know, when I think about the GM search, I think one important thing I would like to see in a GM is someone who is balanced in building the roster. By that I mean, you know, if you look at the, I think, strategic misstep that's led us to where we are today, I think there's been too much emphasis on playing the game outside the numbers. And one symptom of that is the weak linebacker play, which we've had for years. So I think someone who comes in as a GM can say, look, I'm going to emphasize certain positions, but I'm not going to completely ignore other positions, because in the NFL, if you have a hole, and you guys know this well, that's going to get exploited in the NFL by coaches and other staff. And if you think about our linebacker position, look at our record against tight ends. When
not
we
good.
Had pass rushers, and I go all the way back to Perry Fuel, what was the frustration? Well, we can't get to the quarterback because they get rid of the ball quickly. Well, why? Because we can't cover the intermediate stuff. And, you know, there's a team in New England that essentially plays the game in the middle of the field, very little outside the numbers. And by the way, this has a domino effect on the salary cap, because when you think about the glamour positions, they're wide receiver, quarterback, pass rushers, you know, and that really drives up your salary. And that's why we're paying corners so much money, defensive end so much money. And we got to get away from that. We got to have a balanced roster throughout. That's my main comment about the GM search, and then I have a comment about offensive line.
Well, I think that the comments and the, some of the questions and answers that are being asked in these interview processes is what you just said. Where is the weakness in this team? How are we going to address the salary cap and some of these other players? You know, I think every team, when you look at the top four positions, it's always quarterback, defensive ends, left tackles, and corners. Those are your guys that are making the most money. But if you have all those guys making all that money and nothing in the middle of the field, like you're saying, you're going to have a deficiency and it's going to be exploited. And that's what's happening. I think that the Giants have to address what they're going to do with some of these positions, but they've got to shore up the middle of that defense. And now listen, the Giants have been depleted at that position this year, literally depleted.
Injuries have been overwhelming.
I mean, just unbelievably. You got Calvin Munson, a free agent off the street, starting football games for you. You have Shepard, a guy that's just, you know, I mean,
Curtis Grant, yeah.
Just guys you don't even know of.
Well, and that's been the problem. I mean, I would say that, to Hugo's point, have they gone out and made a big splash at the linebacker position? No. Have they drafted guys? Yes. The problem is Devon Kennard could not stay healthy early in his career.
BJ Goodson,
who's even younger than Devon Kennard, who looks like he has plenty of upside. You thought this was going to be a coming out party for him, and what happens?
Hurt.
He plays less than 10 games. So, you know, even the young guys that they've tried to invest in and develop have not panned out.
No real resources have been spent at the linebacker.
Well, no, and listen, we know that going back to Carl Banks, the last first round linebacker. You know,
and Michael Bowie in free agency. Ever since then, we really haven't spent real money.
Antonio Pierce is a guy that should certainly
middle linebacker.
Yeah, but, I mean, and you look at a guy like Chase Blackburn. You know, he was an unknown commodity and turned out to be a very valuable player. And you know, they acquired Beeson, and Beeson flashed in that first season, and unfortunately was plagued by injuries again. So I think that there have been a few names here or there. The problem is, and it's what you brought up, Jeff, injuries have absolutely plagued that position over the last few years.
Which sometimes from a GM's perspective and a personnel, you're afraid to go out and spend a lot of money on a linebacker because historically here they get hurt. So it's like, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah, well, the other thing about getting speed at linebacker, as you know, Jeff, is it helps in special teams a whole lot.
Oh, God.
So some of the poor special teams plays because maybe we're lacking real playmakers in the middle of the field, and that gets reflected in the way special teams gets played.
Somebody asked me about special teams after the game the other night when we did our show down in the coaches club about special teams, and obviously it was a hot topic because of what happened last week. But I was telling Paul Dottino about special teams and what happens when you have a depleted roster from top to bottom. The most glaring area that you see the production, it goes down in special teams, because now most of your special teams guys are not starters, but they're also guys that shouldn't even be on the football team.
Right.
You know, and even though the special teams is a third of the game and you have somewhat 35 to 45 games or snaps a game, some of those can be crucial when you don't have the personnel, and that's what we're seeing. We don't have a returner, cannot get a punt return, can't get a kickoff return. We can barely protect on the punt team because the linebackers are all guys we don't even know their name.
Yeah.
In fact, when we're doing the inactives during the week on our pregame show, this is no lie. We've got to really look at these names and say, what is this guy's first name? I mean, that's how bad it's got, right, Lance?
He's been here for seven days. He's been here for three.
No,
it has been a challenge, yeah. I mean, here's another thing. Matt Burhe is hurt the last game, so Darian Thompson has to fill in for him. Now, he's a starter, but he hasn't played that position. So I would take it even a step further, Jeff. It's not so much that you don't have starters. It's you're throwing guys into spots where they haven't had a lot of practice reps.
And I will.
That's the problem.
And you mentioned about, you know, exploitation and coaches, how they know how to coach. They see these personnel moves. They know that Nat Burhe is the personal protector on the punt team. And when they see another guy in there, they are going to bring it. And they're going to try to confuse him because he's not used to it. And that's what happened on the block punt.
Which is good coaching.
It's absolutely good coaching. They see that up in the box. They know the personnel. They say, hey, you know what? Number 24 is not the PP. They got 37 in there. We need to, you know, let's go ahead and just get an all-out rush and see if he can make the calls. And he didn't.
Yeah. Absolutely. Hugo, real quickly, I know you had another point before we let you go.
Yeah, the offensive – look, guys, I think the offensive line rebuild is a tougher thing than most people are anticipating. I looked at the list of free agent tackles and the draft prospects. I think it's going to be hard to build at the edges through tackles. But I do think that interior linemen is where the strength lies. And I think you've got to be very careful and sign and draft where the strengths are and not push it to the edges. I would not be surprised to see Eric Flowers. And I think he's a right tackle. And by that, I don't care if he's on the left side or right side, but he's the guy on the line who can't win with his feet, so he needs a tight end at his hip. And I wouldn't be surprised if they sign, one of the guys, let's say Justin Pugh, and have him play sort of the left tackle. He can win with his feet. There aren't a lot of left tackles out there.
And even the guys that were out there on the market this year, we saw how much money they went for, and there wasn't a great deal of depth. Yeah. And appreciate the phone call. You go, thanks so much for weighing in.
Yeah, no, it's you know, we haven't started to break down the college seniors coming out and who they are and free agency and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of times it's not as easy as you think to go out there and spend money and draft guys, and all of a sudden you think your offensive line is going to be one of the best. You look at the Cowboys. They invested over that offensive line over 4 or 5 years building that offensive line with first-round draft picks, you know, one at a time. It wasn't like they went out and got, you know, a left tackle, a right guard, and a center in the one draft.
Years. Yeah.
So it does take some time, but, you know, certainly there can be, in my mind, a big improvement from what has happened this year going into next year with some additional players. I think Justin Pugh is another one that that the Giants are going to have to address. He's going to be a free agent. He's a good locker room guy. He's a good guy around the building. He's a hard worker. He tries to play. I mean, he does get banged up a little bit. Other than his rookie season, he's missed games. So that's something that will be a little bit of a knock on him, but hopefully he gets better. And I think that him being out of lineup has hurt this offensive line. DJ Fluker is another guy. Did he sign a 2-year deal or is he a one?
I believe Fluker was just a 1-year deal.
So you got to look at him and see how much he helped the offensive line last year. It certainly seems to me that he did. I think that the production in the run game was better when he was in the lineup. So, and then you got Justin Richburg is another free agent that you have to address. You know, is Jones going to be your guy? And
there's a lot of
Flowers.
Question marks.
I mean, yeah. I mean, John Jerry, they signed to a two-year deal.
Correct. Jerry was a multi-year deal.
Yeah. So
I mean, it really comes down to we can sit here and speculate all we want until you know who the new GM is and what the new GM's philosophy is. Because this is what I said: if it's somebody, whether it be internal or external, we just don't know how they view all of these players that we just mentioned, Jeff. Because, you know, Jerry Reese, he was in the chair. You know, how he viewed Justin Pugh, how he viewed Weston Richburg, how he views DJ Fluka could be completely different than how the new general manager and the new general manager say, you know what, I've got these 3 or 4 guys in mind. These are the 3 or 4 guys I want to go after. We'll see how the market plays out. And then we'll maybe consider bringing back some of our own. But right now, I want to go in a completely different direction. That may be the GM's philosophy. Very hard to tell at this point.
And that's his prerogative. I mean, they hired him. They're not going to hire a general manager and say, by the way, you need to do this, this, and this.
Because why would you want to limit their reach?
You can't.
And nobody would want to take that job.
So, I mean, the GM's philosophy may be in to come into this season next year, an off season, and say, you know, I'm looking at this roster. And, you know, I don't have to make anybody happy here. I'm just going to tell you right now, this roster is horrible. And, you know, 65% of this team needs to go. And I'm going to make the decision, and we're going to build this from the ground up. We have a quarterback. We have a receiver. We have 2 defensive linemen. We've got a good all-pro safety. We've got some parts in there that we can do, but we can't play with these guys. I mean, you guys were 2-1. You know, whatever.
2-12, yeah.
So I think that's going to be the address that's going to come down, and there's going to be – and this has been my point the whole time with the guys that are on the roster right now. If you say they have nothing to play for, you're playing for your job. I mean, they're going to be a new coach, a new GM, and so for you to go out there and take plays off and put that type of performance on film – now, I would tell you that the last 2 weeks there's been a change. The guys have gone out there and played, but what the heck took so long? You know?
Well, I mean, clearly, like you said, the message should have been on the wall a few weeks ago, and I'm not saying that anybody quit on this team, but I agree with you. I think they realize with so much turnover in terms of the general manager and the coach, I mean, all the next step is going to be the roster.
I mean, did they think that, you know, that they weren't going to get fired? I mean, they fired the coach and the GM. That probably said, they fired the coach and the GM. That probably means that I'm going to get fired,
too.
Or
changes could be coming down the line.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, when did you wake up and then realize that? I mean, that's – and you've heard me say this before. As many years as I played in the league, I was always afraid to lose my job, and that's probably why I played so long, because I never took it for granted. I always figured that I was going to get cut, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't. And, you know, there's a lot of other things that go into that, and timing and, you know, salary and those kinds of factors. But the bottom line is that you have to put your you go out every Sunday – and your job is being evaluated not only by this team, but the 31 other teams are looking at the way you're playing. And whether you're going to be back or not, the new GM is going to tell you sooner than later.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Tom is in New Jersey. Tom, what do you got for us?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing good. All right, Tom. What do you got for us?
So I had a quick question about the defensive line. And I know you guys just talked about it a little, but my question was specifically about JPP and Vernon. So I understand that both guys have been dealing with injuries and everything, and especially Vernon because he's missed some time. But it just seems like we're not getting enough out of those two. That there's just not enough pass rush in general on a consistent basis. And I know, you know, they're playing most of the reps, but it seems like the major problem is that there's a lack of depth at the line. And so would you say that the pass rush should be addressed in the offseason in a major way? Like, yeah, I feel like it's just being flown, I feel like it's flying under the radar right now, but I feel like there's something depth on the defensive line is something that definitely needs to be addressed.
I think it's a great question. It also goes back to prior drafts, when you build a team, yeah, you have your stars like OV and JPP, but you have to be prepared and you have to draft well and you have to sign guys and you have to evaluate so that you know that both those guys are not going to play 16 games and 99% of your snaps the whole game or the whole season. So you have to develop, and that's what's been wrong with this team. The depth on this team has been horrendous, and it has happened through the draft. You know, you look back to all the way to 2012 and look at this team and where the draft picks are on this team and the depth at certain positions. They are just – they're vacated. They're not there. So that has to be addressed coming up, is the depth at each position and going out. And that's all about scouting. That's all about the general manager and the personnel department finding those players that, even though they're not – top tier players, you got to have, guys that can back guys up. And if one of your main guys gets hurt and he has to be out for four games, you got to know that your guy behind, and most likely it's a young guy that's still developing, but still has some skill. If you don't have those skills, forget about it. It's not going to work.
That's what I was saying. So I feel like you have to be able to take Vernon and JPP out for a few snaps and not worry that quarterbacks are going to sit back there for 7 seconds. Or those backups are going to get run all over.
Correct. You know? Well, good teams in the NFL, if you look at the teams with the elite pass rush in groups, they have 3, 4, 5 different players that they rotate. I mean, the Eagles, who the Giants just played, a guy like Vinnie Curry, who is not necessarily a starter, but they work him in, and he's up there in terms of his sack numbers.
Yeah,
so
5 sacks for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, you need that type of production. But so let's apply this to the Giants. Keep in mind. All right, so Romeo Okwara was expected to be a guy that maybe could step up this year. He was just activated
Avery Moss,
of injured reserve.
But let's
Avery
real quickly on Okwara. He was a free agent. Okay, so I'm saying, they hit on
meaning
him.
An undrafted free agent.
Undrafted guy. Yeah. Okay, but go ahead.
But so you're right. It's not like you're grabbing guys in the second round, to your point. And then 00, who's not on the roster, he was let go. He was a third-round pick. Okay, you expected that he would develop into somebody that would
major
be that third
bust.
Pass rusher. Okay, so that didn't work out. And then Kerry Wynn, another undrafted free agent on the same level as Romeo Okwara, who has shown some flashes here or there, but he's dealt with some injuries, and you haven't necessarily gotten the consistency out of him. So, I mean, those are the options. You got to look at the reality.
I think Wynn is different, though. Yeah. I think Wynn has actually been a valuable part of this team in many different aspects, special teams, defense. You know, he's a reserve guy. He's just good to have around. He knows the system.
I agree, but you have to understand, you're at the point where Kerry Wynn is number three. So
exactly,
you're beyond the point where you want to say, well, we're just going to get special teams needs out of him. You want him to also be that consistent weapon on defense. So my point is, with all the injuries, everybody's had to elevate their game and thrown into additional roles, and that hasn't necessarily panned out for everybody on
the
roster.
It goes back to the draft. Yeah. It really does. You got to be able to draft players that develop under your stars, that are able to fill in, and in 2 years – from now, they're ready to take that next step, and they can be in that rotation and still give you 4 or 5 sacks, okay? You know, you look at Moore. What's the guy's Moore?
DeMontre Moore. That's another guy.
There's another guy that you
drafted.
Thought that would be, okay?
Exactly.
But the guy was just a train wreck off the field. So my point is that the new GM, you've got to put a lot of stock in his in what he's going to do and how to build this team through the draft. This team has not been built well through the draft over the years, and it's now rearing its ugly head, and it really has for years. And really, Jerry Reese, okay, he's gone now, and that's basically why he was fired. I mean, the roster was not built to a sense that he was able to keep his job because of it.
And appreciate the phone call, Tom. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's head back to the lines. We got Dave in the Bronx. Dave, what's happening?
Dave in the Bronx.
Hey, Merry Christmas, guys.
You too. How's the Bronx today? A lot of traffic over there, probably?
I'm off from work, so I don't know. I'm inside right now relaxing.
There you go. Good. Well, that's good.
That's a smart game plan. Long weekend. Yeah. So what do you got for us, Dave?
Well, I'm 44 years old. I've been retired for about 4 years. I've been on these games. I follow college football. I follow all NFL teams. I'm a pretty, I think, a decent student of the game. And I'm a hardcore Giants fan.
Very good.
So my question is this. This new GM that's coming in, is he going to be clueless on fixing the offensive line? Or is he going to be filled in?
He can't be clueless on – he's got to fix this offensive line.
I mean, Jerry Reese was pretty clueless. I can't believe he didn't put any reserves into the right tackle position other than Bobby Hart, who was a seventh-round pick, and undrafted Chad Wheeler. I mean, I don't know, guys. I just hope they
– You have to. I mean – even because – I tell you this. We don't know what's going to happen to the QB position. The Giants are sitting here with a luxury pick that they thought would never have
Eli
happened.
Is not the problem. Eli has another good 4 years.
You know,
if they just protect the guy and let him go through his progressions.
Okay, and, and that was my point. My point is if Eli is your guy, we know that if he has protection, he can be productive. So you can't just turn a blind eye to this offensive line. This is going to be a redress. This has to be the point of focus for this offense next year. You got a tight end. You got receivers. Okay, and you've got a decent running back. You just have no offensive line. You got a quarterback that can still play. For God's sakes, the guy threw for 400 something yards last week. Okay, the guy can still play some football if he has protection.
I have something I wanted to say. You know, because Jerry Reese always talked about competition, and I didn't see any for the offensive line. Not really.
Well,
I mean,
I think
the left tackle position, Eric Fly was just basically given to him because Will Beatty. Moved on from the injury.
Well, Beatty got
but
hurt,
But he was never really given any competition for that left tackle position.
I don't think they could find any competition for him.
Well, there's no depth.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah, you talked about it with the last caller. You know, I would like to see, and I could talk to nausea about Jerry Reese, and from the third round and beyond, his draft picks were just horrible for many years. I think Mario Manningham was the last third-round pick that was decent, and that's going back. I mean, the book is not out yet on Davis Webb because he hasn't been given a chance yet. But I think Darian Thompson so far has not played well in his second season. His first season, I'll give him a pass on because he was hurt. But I like to see more out of him. And Landon Collins should be playing more near the line. That's his strength. He shouldn't be in the back end. And when Ben McAdoo said at the beginning of the season, you know, our defense is going to have to lead us, that's a hidden pock shot on how bad the offense really was. He knew it. You know, and Jerry Reese really should have had more of a clue going in. They were 11-5 last season because of the defense. $200 million spent on three guys, and they really pulled it together. I give Jerry Reese credit for the fact that he really built up that secondary. DRC, Jenkins, the picks that he brought aboard were good picks. I mean, they were good free agent acquisitions. Snacks, Jenkins, and Vernon. You know, they were good pickups. I'm not going to pick on them. That was a big reason why they were able to close out games and finish 11-5. But if you fix this offensive line, guys, and just give Eli some protection, it will take a lot of pressure off that defense. They'll get some rest. And stop going three and out for the first three possessions. You know what I mean?
Well, last week they scored three touchdowns on first three possessions.
Correct, which was the first time they did that since 2014.
Gotta give them some credit when credit's due, right?
They made adjustments.
No.
I'll
give credit on that Eagles game. But it was a long time in coming, guys.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know
how many
that.
Games did they have? Less than 20 points a game, like 7 or 9 games, less than 20 points a game.
Oh, it has been a struggle on the offensive end. But I think what you have to understand when you focus on the offensive line is you have to understand what the philosophy of the new GM is. For example, if they go in the direction of a younger quarterback, their philosophy may not be to bring in veteran offensive linemen on 1 or 2 year deals who are not going to be part of the long-term solution. They may want to develop a young offensive line in conjunction with a young quarterback. I'm just throwing out a hypothetical here. Although if the philosophy is Eli still has a few more years and we want to build around him, then I could see the value, Jeff, in bringing in some veteran offensive linemen, because you know you're going to give Eli time and you're going to build on around him for the next 2 to 3 years. But if you go in the direction of a younger quarterback, you bring in an offensive lineman on a 1 or 2 year deal. By the time the kid's 3 years into his NFL career, you're going to have to now redo the offensive line.
Possibly.
So, you know, that
unless your quarterback, your young guy, is going to go in and he's going to, you know, it's really too early to even talk about all this because
you don't
know.
You just don't know what the philosophy is.
You can't gauge it. And I think that, you know,
I like to see the Giants go back to a more traditional offense that they had and get rid of this West Coast stuff. I mean, West Coast works if you have a mobile quarterback. Eli's not mobile.
Well, once again, but that still goes back to who the new coach is. What branch the new coach comes from in terms of his offensive background, who he brings in as the coordinator. You know, is Eli going to be the quarterback? There's so many factors right now that have to be answered, Dave, before you automatically say they have to go in this direction.
I have another question real quick. The scouts that worked under Jerry Reese, will they be replaced or will they – how does that all work with the new GM coming in? Will we have a new scouting?
Most of the time when these guys are getting interviewed, that's a question that's asked. You know, who are your if you were the GM, you know, who are some people that you would want to bring to the organization from your scouting department? And you better have answers. You know, you don't want to sit there and say, well, you know, I just have to look at the landscape of, you know, some of the college guys or, you know, some of these other scouts, or do we go grab one from New England and bring them here or this and that? You know, I think that the Giants scouts have been here a long, long time. And there's probably a little bit – might be a little bit of a youth movement going on in that position. And maybe not saying to get rid of all the other guys, but maybe just to the fact that they need to go a different route and get younger with some of these guys or what have you. Because and this is all questions that are being asked in these meetings about the scouting. And so to answer your question, I think there will be some changes in there, but what type, I don't know.
Well, Dave, appreciate the phone call. I think there's a few things that – are related to that question, Jeff. Number one, your scouts have been going from college to college through the college football season. You're not making any changes, if at all, until the draft is over, because these are the guys that have been doing the heavy lifting. No, I'm not saying that
happens.
You were inferencing that, but you can't expect, even if the new GM is hired the second week of January, he can't afford to get rid of the entire scouting department
because
are the guys that are going to have to advise him when it comes to the draft selection.
And you've seen a lot of times right after the draft,
then
the personnel
changes.
Director is fired and the scouts
Correct.
Are fired because they're not going to cut their nose to spite their face.
And I've brought this up on multiple shows. The Bills did exactly that. When Brandon Bean came in as general manager, he came in after the draft, and then he cleaned house in the scouting department because they needed the scouts to advise them for who to select. So if any changes are going to be made, it wouldn't happen until after the draft. Now, John Mara was asked about this when he announced that they parted ways with Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese. And I'm trying to find the transcripts. I don't have it in front of me. I'm going off the top of my head, paraphrasing it, so don't hold me word to word to the quote. But he indicated that he didn't anticipate that there would be an entire cleaning house, and he hoped that perhaps they wouldn't necessarily do that. But a lot of that is going to be determined on what the GM who comes in is thinking.
Yep.
So, once again, that's a to-be-determined type of thing. But as I mentioned, very unlikely any tweaks to any personnel positions are going to be made until after the draft, because these are the people that have been doing the heavy lifting. Right now, it's business as usual. I mean, they're going about their business. They're scouting. Nothing's changed from that perspective.
They got the Senior Bowl coming up.
They got the bowl. Correct. They got to go and continue with the reps and do what they normally do at this time of the year, because they don't know when the GM is going to be announced and they have to prepare for the draft. So that's how they have to look at it. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got David in Connecticut. David, what's happening?
Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
All right. What do you got for us?
My original question coming in was about special teams, but I'm glad you guys brought up the GM search because I had some thoughts on that. But regarding the special teams this past week, you know, regardless of any draft position, when I see the Eagles play, especially when they're playing us, I want them to lose, and I want to win the game. So it was disappointing to see. You know, I feel like special teams is, in my opinion, been a disappointment for the past couple years, especially on returns. Mm-hmm. I feel like Dwayne Harris really was not exceptional by any means, in my opinion. And just seeing where things fell apart to lose the game, it's just unacceptable. And even, you know, I like this Rojas kid. He's got a big leg. And I'm looking at this, you know, Robbie Gould over in San Francisco. Garoppolo's putting him in field goal range, and he's having two or three best weeks of his career. And I, you know, Jeff, I'm honored to speak with you. I'm glad
Thank
to have
you.
Your opinion about it.
Well, I'll tell you about Rosas real quickly about Rosas. You know,
yeah.
he's had a few blocks this year. I think
yeah.
he's got five misses on the season, and you probably have the stats in front of you. But you know, and he's 27 field goal attempts. Okay, this is a team that doesn't score a lot of points, so he's not getting a lot of opportunities to kick field goals. But he's only missed maybe three field goals on the season. Okay, the other ones have been blocked. Okay, and I think that. You know, this is a guy that I hope they don't quit on. I'm telling you, I think he's got a future. He just has to – he's young. He's just got to learn about the pressures of the game between the ears. He's got all the tools you want. I will agree with you that special teams this year has been a major disappointment. I don't think Brad Wing has had a great year this season, coming off of a really good season last year. The return game, ever since Dwayne Harris got hurt, has really not been anything. I mean, the first year he had a punt return for a touchdown and a kickoff return. That was exciting because we hadn't seen that around here in a long time. But
right.
There has been no production. And I think if you call it a third of the game and in a way that when you're on a team that's trying to win, you've got to be able to somehow take one of those sectors of the game, offense, defense, or special teams, and win consistently every week, even though your other parts of it aren't, to give yourself a chance to win. And the special teams have done nothing to help in that area.
Well, because field position has been
yeah.
such a problem, especially when you're an offense that's not scoring points. The last thing you could do is all of a sudden give the opposition favorable field position because of special teams mishaps.
Well, look at the two games the Giants lost when Brad Wing had two horrendous punts and they went down and scored touchdowns and lost the game because of that. I mean, there's your point. That,
yeah.
you know, then you got a blocked field goal, a blocked punt, and a blocked extra point last week in a game that the Giants should have won. You take three of those games that we just talked about, special teams, three of those 12 losses have been on the special teams this year. Those were three games that the Giants could have won sitting here at five wins possibly, maybe six. Total tears the landscape of the season.
So I had a question for you then. So we're getting all these blocks, right? Is it people who are not starting in the offense or defensive side of the ball that are playing the line on
special teams?
You know, special teams,
yeah,
most of the time.
It's your bottom third of the roster. It's your fourth
and goes,
fifth linebacker.
That goes back to this last point of the draft. If we don't have this depth of quality to keep that bottom afloat. I mean, we're proving it right here.
Well, the injuries have been a big
Correct.
Problem.
Yeah,
that's true.
And yeah. just as much as the draft, it's just as much as the injuries. And like I said it earlier, I don't know if you had heard me, but what happens is when you have guys that are hurt on your and depleted at your first two positions, your first and your second team guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of a sudden your third and fourth team guys that are special teams players, and
yep.
those and these are guys that are off the street, that your special teams are going to hurt because of it. They really are. And, you know, and a lot of these guys are, you know, will volunteer, like Landon Collins and, you know, some of the starters will volunteer to play special teams. But they're on the field so much, they don't want to take a chance of getting hurt on special teams. And then you go out there and now you can't play on offense or defense. So
you got to watch their snaps.
It does make a huge difference in special teams as far as depth. And so those guys that are getting, you know, that are on that punt team and giving up punt blocks and extra points and field goals, they don't have the reps, they don't have the experience, and they're really,
mm-hmm.
to be honest with you, they probably shouldn't be on the team.
Yeah.
I mean, really, at this point, there's a lot
no,
of guys on this team that are
because
that are on the roster that really, if this team was any good, they wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about guys that have been on the roster for like 2 to 3 weeks, and
just,
that's what happens when you lose your third and fourth guys on the depth chart. So while everybody points to the draft, and I get it, this is a year where the injuries, I think, is a reasonable excuse
yeah.
to understand why players are on special teams that wouldn't normally be.
And look
be
at last year. The Giants had a pretty decent special teams year. They won 11 games. Their defense played well, and pretty much their team stayed healthy last year.
Yeah. And appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, David.
You got it, Dave. Appreciate the phone call. I wanted to read the part of the transcript where John Mara addressed about cleaning house beyond the general manager position. Then we'll get back to the phone lines here. This was the question at the press conference when they let go of Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo. Question was, having never been through this process with a general manager, do you feel like it has to be a total front office overhaul, or can a new GM come in and keep the staff? John Mara's answer, quote, well, I think that's going to be largely up to the new GM. And we go through this back in 07 when Jerry was hired. We kept most of the people, and I'm not anticipating there being wholesale changes. But again, that's largely going up to be the new going up to the new general manager. End quote. So, pretty much what
Pretty much, it's nothing until we find out something. That's what that one is.
Head back to the phone lines. Chris is in Texas. Chris, what's happening?
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Same to you, Chris.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in from Texas. Are you in Texas?
Yeah, actually, I'm driving way south down in the valley to my in-laws for the holidays.
Very nice.
But I'm a Houston guy. I call up pretty often, though. But I still am a Giants season ticket holder. I was up a couple of weeks ago for the Cowboys game. Unfortunately, we lost that one. But quick statement about the quarterback situation. Then I wanted to ask you about something that I've read in NJ.com just recently about the GM. As far as the quarterback, I honestly think they know what they have in Davis Webb, and I think if we show the hand that, and we've also heard Landon Collins and DRC comment about him amongst other people as well, that Webb has a hell of an arm. I actually know somebody that saw him play over at Texas Tech and said tremendous arm. I think if we show our hand by him playing now, I think that would affect our possibilities for trading down in the draft. So I think by keeping him on the shelf, I also think that piques the interest of Sam Darnold to quite possibly come out thinking that there might be a shot to go into a respectable organization like the Giants. So I honestly see Eli coming back next year with Davis Webb being the number two. I wanted to get your opinion on that before I ask you the question on the GM. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's going to be a philosophy on the new position that's hired here, where this guy wants to go. One thing that the new GM is going to do is there's going to be a meeting. There's going to be a meeting with number 10, the new GM, the new coach, the ownership, and have a little bit of a discussion about number 10's future, what his plans want to be, you know, include him in this rather than pull the carpet out from underneath him like happened. So I think once you come out of that meeting, I think that the philosophy going forward into the draft will dictate the answer that you're looking for. I don't have it. I believe that Eli has another year left. I believe that if you can improve the offensive line around him, and a healthy Odell Beckham, an experienced Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, a healthy Sterling Shepard, some of these younger receivers, and a little bit of a better line, I think the offense can come around. But that may be all just for nothing if they decide to go the route and get a new quarterback and say that, and that's going to be up to number 10. Do you want to stick around for another year, and we're going to play the guy right away? There's just so many unanswered questions to talk about, which is tough.
Well, I don't think they're hiding Davis Webb, to Chris's point, because they're worried about what Sam Darnold is thinking. Sam Darnold's at the end of the day is going to do what's good for him, and he knows that there's 31 other teams that could very well be looking for a future quarterback. So I don't think that he's worried about, you know, what Davis Webb could show. And here's the other thing. Even if Davis Webb got out there for the last game of the season, Chris, it'd be such a small sample size that for all of a sudden everyone to have a great idea of what Davis Webb could do to me would be extremely misleading, because that's only one game. How many times have we seen veteran quarterbacks? They go out one game or two, they flash, and then all of a sudden you see the rest of the season play out and it's not the same because they're not able to duplicate that production.
You're absolutely right. But I think if in the small sample that he showed that he was very successful, and your team, like the Cardinals, the Jets, if you're looking for a quarterback, why would you want to mortgage more with trying to move up to the number two spot, knowing if the Giants aren't going to take a quarterback? So,
but here's the thing. And I get that, Chris, but you know what? You never know. We've seen teams take positions because they feel they're the best player available as opposed to need. So you're going under the assumption, if you're the Jets or the Cardinals, I'm using your hypothetical, that the Giants are going to fill a need with the number two spot, as opposed to saying, hey, you know what, we're just going to take the best player available and then maybe we'll make a trade down the road. I think that's a big assumption on the part of those other teams.
I see that. And I would like to trade down a couple of spots just because I think we need more talent in the organization.
And I think
personally,
that would make sense.
I wouldn't mind trading down, getting, you know, if we could get a great running back like Barkley out of Penn State, You know, that would be great. But we'll see what happens with that. With regards to the GM, I feel like, quite honestly, I feel like if Gettleman gets a position, I think he's going to bring Steve Wilks in because of their ties to Carolina. I like what I researched on Steve on Wilks. I am a big fan of McDaniels. I agree what Jeff said a little while ago about somebody with something to prove. Despite that he has the 4 or 5 Super Bowl rings, I think what happened in Denver really is reminiscent. I know it was a smaller sample than Belichick, but Belichick was, quite frankly, I would imagine, a little embarrassed when he was with the Browns. So I think he had that something to prove as well. So I was on board with Caserio, hoping that Caserio would be able to be pried away so he could bring McDaniels. But now that I read about Lewis Riddick's relationship with McDaniels, that's encouraging. But the question that I had for you is, I was reading James Cratch's article yesterday, and I was curious about Phil Sims, his name being in there. Is there any traction to that, or is that just something written?
I think it was just something written. Nothing that I have heard of, but, I mean, who am I?
And appreciate the phone call, Chris. Thanks so much for waiting.
I mean, I think that, you know, Phil Sims is another guy that has been around the organization, but he's also been in the broadcast booth. He's never been in an organization where he's been evaluating players like Lewis Riddick has before.
Correct. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when you are in a situation like the Giants are now, you can't afford to make a mistake and go out and hire a GM like Phil Sims just because he's a fan favorite and he's
a name.
You are in dire straits right now in a situation where you have got to get this team back to respectability. You got to build the brand again because this brand has been very tarnished, and I think that would be a disaster. I think this has got to be a big splash with this GM hire and something that the fans get excited about again, because last week you saw a lot of green in that stadium. We heard it. I mean, Eli even said Bobby Hart couldn't even hear the cadence on the goal line in your home stadium. That's telling.
Brett Jones had issues at the center position, Eli Manning indicated, too. So,
you know, that's why this is such an important hire. It's why that the Giants are going to take their time and do the right thing. And I feel that they will. I just, you know, I hope that they think long and hard about doing something that maybe outside their comfort zone, because they've done it for so long that maybe this is the time that they say, hey, listen, we're going to go against what we've done in the past and see if this can be successful.
But when you say that, also somebody, though, that has experience.
What I meant, like, you know, I know that the thing to say is with Dave Gettleman, you know, he was here and then he went and then he came back and whatever. You know, that's the sexy – that's kind of – not the sexy. That's just kind of the – you know, the pick that everybody thinks is going to happen. Outside of that, I would like to see it with somebody that's very aggressive. It has, you know, and then, like I said, and is going to hire a coach that's hungry. And together they can say, by the way, we both work for the New York Football Giants now. This is a huge title. This is an amazing organization. Let's go. Let's go. No, we're not going to hold back. We're gonna hurt some people's feelings by doing some personnel changes that may not be fan favorite, but we got to do it. And this is what they hired us to do, and move on. So speaking of moving on, I think we have to move on.
Yes, we are. But I just wanted to throw out, because the caller threw out a name just for context purposes. Steve Wilks is the assistant head coach, defensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers, in case that name went over everybody's heads. That's why he threw it out, because of his ties to Dave Gettleman in Carolina. With that being said, that is going to wrap up Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate everybody tuning in. We're going to have our normal Giants Radio Network pregame show start at 2:10 p.m. Eastern on WFAN on Sunday. So hopefully you'll tune in as we get you set for the Giants and the Cardinals. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest team news. For Jeff Eagles, I'm
Lance Meadow. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas for those to you who celebrate. We'll have Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running on Tuesday next week. There is no show on Monday because of the Christmas holiday, so we'll speak to you on Tuesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.